This episode is sponsored by Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy is dedicated to providing 100% carbon-free energy by 2050, but they can't do it alone. They need your help. Join Xcel Energy and you'll find a purpose-driven career, solid job security, and challenging work. Xcel Energy knows the value your military service brings to the workplace. It's an exciting time to be in the energy industry. Whether you're on active duty, transitioning, or already embarking on your civilian career, learn about the opportunities with one of America's leading utilities, Xcel Energy, at xcelenergy.com/military. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and my goal is to challenge and support the military veteran community to reach their peak potential inside and outside of the office. Today's episode number 334, Navy SEAL to College Football Coach, with Jake Zwig.
What you want and what's good for you are two different things, right? Like, I got to tell my players all the time, like, I want to start. Okay, you're a true freshman. If you start, there's probably problems on the team. And so, like, everybody's like, oh, man, you got my dream job. I'm like, really? You want to go work at Finley for $19,000 a year for 3 years?
Yeah.
Because I did, right? Do you want to go to Iona for a season and live in a closet for 4 months for $7,000, right? Like, that's just part of it. Like, it's just the business is grimy, and it's hard to get into. It's hard to stay in, you know, but it's awesome profession. It's just there's really only, call it, 13 people on a staff. Like, even on my staff, there's 13 people that make over $100,000 a year.
There are so many reasons to listen to today's interview. First of all, sports. Jake is the first person I've interviewed who has had a career in sports leadership. He is currently the director of player development at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and we talk a lot about the NFL, coaching in college and professional football, and what this industry is really like. Second, television. Jake is a dynamic personality and has been featured on both the Discovery Channel and the Scout Media Network. This interview offers a behind-the-scenes look at what it's like being on TV and about extending one's personal brand. Lastly, motivation. I found Jake and his story very uplifting. His perspective on failure, on pushing oneself, and on pursuing a personal goal with relentlessness are all informative and inspirational. If you enjoy this episode, be sure to check out episode 74, Nate Boyer, Army Green Beret to the NFL, episode 245, Marine Corps to MMA and the UFC with Liz Carmouche, episode 329, Active Duty Army to the NFL with Alejandro Villanueva, and episode 196, Active Duty Army to UFC contender and Discovery Channel show host with Tim Kennedy. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes with links to all four of those recommended episodes, as well as links to everything we discuss in this interview, over 330 other great episodes, as well as free webinars and other great resources. Special thanks to all of you who have left positive reviews on iTunes. It means a lot. Shout out to Dan WDC, who wrote recently, "Thanks to Justin, his team, and their guests for a phenomenal job. As a retiring veteran, this podcast fills in a lot of blanks and offers some important things to think about, good questions to ask, and useful techniques. Many thanks for giving back in a big way." Thank you, Dan. And for those of you who haven't left a review on iTunes, please consider doing so. With that, let's dive in to my conversation with Jake. Joining me today in Champaign, Illinois, my guest is Jake Zwig. Jake, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Awesome, man. Thank you for having me, man. It's big time right here, man.
So how to squeeze Jake's bio into just a few sentences. First off, he's the director of player development at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He started out at the Naval Academy. He did not have the fortune of being in the class of 2002, but we won't.
After that, he served as a surface warfare officer, qualifying in just 6 months rather than the typical 18 to 24 months before transferring to and becoming a Navy SEAL team officer for 6 years. His career has included work as a football coach at the University of Maryland, the Catholic University of America, the University of New Hampshire, Bryant University, the University of the Incarnate Word, and the University of Findlay. He also has worked as a TV host for both the Discovery Channel and the Scout Media Network, with involvement with the Dude, You're Screwed program and the History Channel's Hot Shot program. He holds an MBA from the University of Michigan, and we are glossing over a ton of stuff, but that is the short version. Maybe Jake, to start off, anything I didn't say in the bio that you want to make sure people know?
Yeah, so you know, you sent me the questions and I was like, man, what am I gonna tell this dude? Then I thought about it. So a lot of people don't know, I grew up as a ceramics person. So I grew up throwing pottery. I bought a pottery wheel as a young kid at a garage sale for $5. Didn't realize it had to have the big cement weight at the bottom of it. So I used to kick as hard as I could and throw and almost die on just one pot. But yeah, I've been throwing pottery for literally a lifetime now. And it's something I do to get away. I haven't done anything since I got over here. But when I was over at Findlay, I was doing a lot of ceramics in the art lab with my guy Dean over there. So
I actually read about that. There was an article that was about the Hot Shot TV show, and you talked about it there. And I think you mentioned that you did, you've done like ceramic helmets too. Was that at your time at Findlay?
Yeah, so I paint helmets for the bros, for the Omega Psi Phi people out there. But like I make, I call them shoebox lids on the wall, basically. Mm. If you took a shoebox lid, made it out of ceramics, and mounted it on the wall, that's basically what it is. Kind of a relief kind of art deal. Mm-hmm. But I can throw anything I want. So, you know, funny story, when I was at Michigan, they didn't want to let me in a ceramics class. They had some highfalutin ceramics program, and I was just some guy from the MBA program trying to dilute their ceramic gods over there. So after 3 weeks of going over there every day and bugging my guy Brian, who's the secretary for the dean, they let me into ceramics 101 class. And so at business school, we only go to school Monday to Thursday. So all day Friday, I threw pots. I threw pots all day Friday, all day Saturday. I was a business school. You know, I wasn't really doing much studying or anything. So so about 3 weeks in, here comes a little Japanese dude, comes in the ceramics room. I'm throwing on Friday afternoon, and he said, come with me. I was like, all right. So we go over to my shelf. And I had told my teacher, like, I'd never be in class, but I got this shelf right here, and this will be all my work. And if you want to grade it, go ahead. As long as you don't give me an F, I'm good. So we went down. There's like 30 things at this point, and we go down each pot, and he's like, did you make? I'm like, yeah. Did you make? But yeah. Like, the whole row. Like, I was like, yo, I made all this whole row.
Let's just cut to the chase. I did everything you see here, I did.
Everything you see, I did. So we go through the whole row. He's like, come with me. So we go upstairs to his office, and my guy Brian, who's now one of my buddies, is sitting at the desk laughing at me, right? And I'm like, what's going on? So we go in the dean's office. He said, we've been trying to figure out for 3 weeks who has been throwing on that shelf. And for 3 weeks, Brian has said it was you, but no one wanted to believe it. I'm like, okay. He's like, we want to make you grad student. No. I'm like, I'm already in the MBA program, man. He's like, we want you to teach. I'm like, I'm already in the MBA program. He's like, we'll give you $2,000 a month stipend. I'm already on stipend. I was in the military, right? Like, it was just, it was funny. So, you know, breaking barriers one day at a time. But, you know, I ended up finishing up there. I ended up with like 20 hours of ceramics. I got all A's and master level ceramics in Michigan. Mm. Now they got a dual degree program. So they wanted me to come back for another year and a half to do the full 60-hour master's degree, which obviously, you know, I wasn't having that. So.
I love it. I had connected on a call before this a couple weeks ago, and I've done a lot of reading since then too about what you've done. And the impression I get is you just throw yourself into something, and the impression I get is like, you're not doing it. There's like not even like an outcome. Like, you know, it's even like on the TV shows you've been on, it's like, Yeah. It's TV, but like you're in it, man. It just seems like you are a man who you decide you want to do something and you do it, but it's very intrinsically motivated. Like the pottery seems like the perfect example. Like you're throwing pottery because you like doing that, and it happens that you get some recognition for it, but that's not why you're doing it.
Yeah, 100%. Like it's funny. Like I give two flips about all the publicity and all the other stuff. Mm. But I do really care that it helps me in recruiting for football, right? Yeah. Like I go on TV, I sign a MAC level class at an FCS program, an Incarnate Word, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's what I love. I don't care that anybody knows me out there. I care that it helps me win more football games.
Yep.
You know, and that's a good way to put it. I haven't heard it that way before, but yeah, that's, you know, like I just don't, like all the other stuff, like when I talked to one of my kids today on the sidelines and I just said, listen, man, like accomplishment to me is a given, okay?
Yeah.
The process of how to accomplish things is where all the work is done.
Mm.
I know the outcome. Like I'm 48 at this point. Like there ain't a whole lot of failures in my track record, you know? And as I get older, there's less and less failures. So like I know how to win, and then I just have to, you know, like, all right, how long is this going to take me to do this? You know what I mean? And that's kind of that. You get to that point in life where you've had enough victories that I expect to win. I hate to lose. Like I cut off my arm not to lose, but the winning part, that's just over there in the list. That goes over there on the other things. That's what you do.
Well, what I love is my perception of you is you have a crystal clear, and we'll get into this, but you have a crystal clear view of your goal, like what you want to achieve. And that allows you, as these things come up, you're doing them, but you're doing it to serve this greater mission. You're like, yeah, I'll be on this podcast. I'll be on this TV show. I'll put out the social media because, and you said this to me last time, you're like, because that's going to help me recruit better players, which is going to help me win more games. It's like, it doesn't matter what someone else wants out of it. You're like, this is what I'm going in for and I'll do it, but I'm doing it to serve this purpose. And I love that. I love the clarity that you have about why you do things.
So like the whole TV stuff came about because I did a big research project because I was trying to figure out how to make more money at New Hampshire when I was up there, really cash strapped program.
Yeah.
And the offensive coordinator's sister who has passed had the number two production house in LA. And we were like, she was like, I'll give you a TV show. So I had to make a business plan to show the head coach, like, look, we can make $40 million a year.
Wow.
The whole athletic budget is $6 million. We can make $40 million a year. And I went down and saw the people at Cake Boss. And so I wanted to go on TV just to kind of get my feet wet and see what's it really like. And then I figured out, like, it's all under control. You know what I mean? Like, TV, I don't care if you say reality TV, scripted TV, whatever it is, they have an idea of what they want to get out of the TV show in the first place. So it's one of those deals where all the pieces are going to fit together. You know, that's one of my huge business plans. I got to go interview for a head coaching job. Big part of my business plan is like, look, we're going to bring social media and a TV show to this institution. And, oh, not only am I going to be able to recruit kids that I had no chance to recruit before, I'm going to take your admissions from 20,000 applications a year to 100,000 applications a year to 200,000 applications a year. And how can I say that? Because let's look at some posts from Cake Boss where they were making 200 cakes a month, and now they're making 20,000 cakes a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, and now it's just being proven. You know, you got a hard knocks in the NFL, obviously. Some people spun off some stuff this year. There's the one-off episodes with Washington State and those guys. But I'm talking about like an all-entrenched, like a OCC chopper type show where you're seeing all the inner workings, the kids. And then here's my big part. My kids are getting famous.
Yeah.
So I'm going to sign better kids, but I can also pay them TV royalties.
Yep.
Because now I can pay them for their name and their likeness. So now I open up Pandora's box as to what do we want to do? And we know how this generation is. It's all about me, I.
Mm.
So let's just feed that, right? Let's. I'm going to try to feed it with a shovel and a blowtorch, and then I'm going to win in recruiting.
I love this too, because I think for listeners, it's important for them to realize, like, I'm just a big believer the intention that we take to an action matters even more than the action. And I could see someone who does the same things you're doing, like is going on TV because they want to feed their ego or they want but your intention is like, look, this is going to help me get money for my program. It's going to help money for my students, going to help all these things. Like, your the purpose and intention behind your action is so powerful. I'm making up this story that that's a big reason why you've been as successful as you've been, because you're bringing this freaking Mack truck of intention behind these actions.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is I can't be fake. I can't, it's impossible for me to not be who I am. And I'm a very genuine person.
Yep.
And so when I get on TV, like, you will get me now, yeah, right? Top Shot, I went off the reservation a little bit because I figured out that you couldn't win the game and they had control of it. They kept giving me guns that didn't work. But, like, dude, you're screwed. I told them, you keep letting me be on a TV show, we're having, you know, like, we're having a rock star TV show.
Yeah.
So, and that's just, it comes back to, like, it's not about my accomplishment. It's about what can I do with it, yeah, right? How can I leverage it? How can I make it grow? Because I know this, I was in Texas, yeah, and I walked into a household on Wednesday evening at 8:30, and I said, hey, guys, what are we doing? You know, I got a huge recruit, 3-star running back and 2-star kicker and then 2-star defensive tackles, and the home visit was the same structure. Only on Wednesday at 8:30, I'll be there. Hey, guys, you got Discovery Channel? Oh, what's that about? Oh, just put on Discovery Channel. And within, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, a commercial would go across. They might catch it. They might not. But when that TV show that started, everybody was like, and then it was a different reception, right? Like,
that's awesome.
As trivial as that is, if you have 2 million followers on Twitter or Instagram, the kids are going to give you more reverence.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, yeah, just winning. Just winning. Winning unconventionally, right? Like, finding a way to do more with less.
So help us rewind the clock. Take us back to 6 years in the Navy. You decide to get out. What was that transition like? And you ultimately go to an MBA program. What drove that decision?
So it's really interesting. I was at the Naval Academy sophomore year, and this African-American, and I'd love to find his name, came in with an olive drab suit with some brown, you know, loafers on, just looking like a G, like boss man central. And he gave us a talk and he said, listen, man, if you stay in, you stay in. If you get out, you got to go get an MBA. And he said, I'm at Wharton. I graduated from Wharton, right, you know, 3 years ago. And this was early, you know, mid-90s. He said, I'm making, you know, $1.5 million 3 years out of Wharton. And I was like, well, damn, okay, we'll go to business school. Okay. And so then, you know, I figured out Harvard was the best business school. You know, then you got Wharton and Stanford and a couple other ones. And so it was always in the back of my head that when I got done with the military, I would, you know, go to business school somewhat. But I loved the military. Like, I didn't have any intentions of ever getting out until I just, you know, you run into a bad officer and he gets you fired. And then, you know, you're not mature enough and don't have mentorship. So, like I said, you know, you get spinning around in your own head. And the next thing I knew, you know, like, I went from the number 2 ranked officer at SEAL Team 8 for 2.5 years to getting fired as an assistant officer in charge. And I was like, oh, you know what? Like, you don't want to respect this? Okay, cool. We'll go to business school. So, you know, I studied for 3 months for the GMAT, and I went and I crushed it, kind of. I got a really high score on the English, which was my first time ever clearing 40% on the standardized test. I got an 81. Oh, I'm sorry, a 70, and then I got an 81 on the math, but I was getting 100s on the math, or 99s. So I was pissed, but I still got a high enough score to get into school. And then I got into Michigan and Dartmouth, and then I didn't get into Harvard because I wrote some garbage essays. And, you know, I went to Michigan because one of my boys from Naval Academy went to Michigan, and we partied for 2 years like he
did. Well, you took a pretty non-traditional, I don't imagine a lot of people went into sports like you did. How important is an MBA for the career path that you've taken?
So it's crazy, right? Like, Ralph Friesen was like, yo, what are you doing? So I was in corporate America. I was getting ready to execute a hostile takeover of my company that I was working at. 55 people employed, like, archaic leadership.
Yep.
I'd already done a bunch of stock moves, and I was like the number 3 shareholder. I was going to be moving up, and I'm making, you know, I was making 200 plus, you know, about 60 to 80 in stock bonuses every quarter, but that was going to go way up. So I was making a ton of money, and then Ralph gave me a GA job, and I was like, I'm taking it, Ralph. And I remember in the interview, he was yelling at me, screaming, there's no way, like, you're too smart for this business. Like, you're, you're stupid. Like, I would never do this. And I was just like, well, I don't know what to tell you, but like, I'm going to take this job for $7,000. And to be honest with you, I haven't been more happier. Like, my wife said, like, the first day, the last day of RGS and the first day of GA and an 18-hour days for the last 15 years, like, I haven't been happier. And at the end of the day, like, I could have took over the company. I'd probably be retired by now. Mm-hmm. But I'm not super motivated by money. Like, I got money, and I'm going to save more money. But I know I got enough to get my kids to college and everything else I need. So, like, let's go do what we want to do.
Coaching ball
is awesome, you know? So
I love that, and I think it's a big driver behind why I do Beyond the Uniform is the conviction that people, when they're living in alignment with who they are, when they're finding a career that's uniquely suited for them, you know, you may make less money, it may seem less prestigious, it may be all these other things, but you are going to be happier and you're going to do better work. And I think your story also illustrates that you've done incredible things. And there's probably this alternate universe where you were making tens of millions of dollars. And I doubt that version of you would be as fulfilled and excited and alive as you are, because you clearly seem to be alive in what you do.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Now, I will spin it around. So 2 years ago, I got a book on my desk called Overachievement sitting over there. Mm. And I had an opportunity 2 weeks after I got the Maryland job. So I spent roughly about 18 months trying to get the Maryland GA job. I went to every practice for a spring. I went to every practice for a season. And then I stood on the side and I joined a booster club so I could go to all the closed practices. Mm. And then they gave me a GA job for $7,000. 2 weeks after that, I got a job offer from Oprah Winfrey for large money, like basically $3,000 a day to go down and run her school in South Africa when she had all those problems. Mm. And I remember, like, I didn't talk to anybody. I was just like, oh, they're trying to take me away from my goals. Mm-hmm. I just got this job. I spent 18 months trying to get this job, and they're tempting me with this carrot, right? And I was like, I'm not going to go do it. But now the book of Overachievement said you should have went done it, because in 2 years from now, Oprah Winfrey would have gave you a rubber stamp. You'd be, you know, GM of the Bears right now. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting. I've changed and manipulated my philosophies, not manipulated, but I've changed my philosophies a little bit, because I have passed on some incredible opportunities to stay hardline on my goals. And I don't necessarily know if that's the right way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're making $7,000 a month, $7,000 a year. Do you turn down $3,000 a day to go work for one of the most prestigious people in the world in South Africa, fix her problems? And then she literally rubber stamps you to get the job you want, right? I don't know. Some things have happened in this business to me that you probably couldn't count on. I had some people really, you know, just spin around backwards on me. So I don't really know. I know where I'm at right now. I know I'm crushing it. And I can't look back at the past. But that's kind of an evolutionary change that I've made.
Yeah. That's such a good point, though. I imagine that all of us kind of rethink decisions, and you never know. But I think what you're surfacing is interesting. I don't even know like what the right answer is there, but it's an incredible question, which is like, when you have a goal, there are times when like sticking to it like a dog makes it all worthwhile. And then there's times where deviating from it may get you there, but who's also to say, you never know. But
you don't know, right? Like, it's life.
Yeah.
You know, but I know this, I've got nothing in life going the easy way.
Yeah.
I just haven't. Like, I got the naval academy, I couldn't read. Mm. You know, I went because it was all math and science. I'm a wizard in math and science. Okay. But like, it sucked. Like, you know, shoot, that place sucks.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I got my kids there now. I got a freshman at West Point right now. Not my kid, but one of my mentees.
Yeah.
And he called me, and I'll say, hey, man, shut up. I told you it sucked. You wanted to go there. He's like, I know, but like, I said, what do you think? I was lying to you when I told you it sucked. I said, but when you graduate, it'll be really good. Yeah. But right now, it's off.
Sucks.
You know?
Yeah.
Same thing with my junior at the Naval Camp. I got junior at Naval Camp. He's saying the same thing. Call me crying about some stuff. I say, hey, man, shut up.
Yeah.
I'll hear this, you know?
Where did your big goal come from?
It's interesting. You know, my college roommate swears that in freshman year, I was talking about being a national championship head coach and being the congressman from the 6th District of Washington State. I've changed that goal because a senator has a lot more power than a congressman does. Mm. So I want to go be a senator, but I'm just going to parlay that on the back of a national championship. So win a national championship, run for Senate, win, do it for 3 or 4 years, say I was a U.S. senator, you know, reach, change the military promotion system so that they'll actually promote superstars instead of just losers to stay in the military. And, you know, that'd be my whole goal, and then pack it in, you know.
That's great. I mean, what I admire is when someone, it just seems like when you have clarity like that of what you're wanting to achieve, you're able to pick and choose things to support that. And everything, it seems like, you know, my observation of you is like everything that you're doing is through that lens. Like, how does this get me closer to that goal? How can I use this to get closer to that goal? And that's very powerful. I'm wondering what would you want listeners to know about your career in football coaching? And in particular, I'm sure there's people listening where you have had their dream career path. Any advice about pursuing this?
Well, I tell everybody, you know, everybody just sees the top end guys making 5, 10, you know, shoot, we got a couple guys make $11 million in the business. There's like 10 of those dudes, right? And so like, everybody's like, oh man, you got my dream job. I'm like, really? Do you want to go work at Finley for $19,000 a year for 3 years?
Yeah.
Because I did, right? Do you want to go to Iona for a season and live in a closet for 4 months for $7,000? Right? Like, that's just part of it. Like, it's just the business is grimy and it's hard to get into. It's hard to stay in, you know, but it's awesome profession. It's just there's really only, call it, 13 people on a staff. Like, even on my staff, there's 13 people that make over $100,000 a year.
Wow.
Right? And you know how this is. Like, I'm not coming with the same perspective of somebody that's, you know, working in a factory or making $50,000 a year. I got an MBA from Michigan. Yeah. I went to the Naval Academy, right? Like,
yep.
I got a buddy that offers me a $300,000 a year job every day. I talk to him on the phone. He's like, come on, I need you to run this glove, this textile company for me. I'm like, no, I'm not coming. He's like, all right, well, I'm going to ask you again tomorrow. So it's like, to me, if I'm not making, you know, north of 200, I still haven't got back to my salary in 2003 yet.
Yeah.
But that's the one thing that a lot of people don't get, right? Like, yeah, I get to, I'm in athletics. I get to talk to young people every day. I'm dealing with the millennials every day, which, you know, is always a little bit different. But it's helped, it's honing my leadership style because I'm going to be leading millennials for the next 20 years. That's just the facts of life.
Yep. I love that too, though, because so my background is more in tech entrepreneurship, but when I talk to people that want to do that, sometimes I just want to say, like, look, I get that you want to do this, and you're probably thinking you're going to do this and you're going to be the next Instagram. Do you still want to do it if you're living with roommates and you're 40 and you're making no money and no one knows who you are? Like, if you really believe that some path is your calling, you got to accept the full gamut. You got to be okay with the spotlight and the extreme wealth and the reality of what it is for most people, which is crazy, crazy difficult life. And that's what I hear with you is like people pinpoint the 10 people on the planet making 20, you know, 10 plus million dollars. And they're like, that's why I want to do it. It's like, dude, I don't trust that. You tell me you're willing to live in a closet for 4 months or you're willing to be paid $7,000 and you're still interested, then I believe your heart's in the right place.
Yeah. So like I get a lot of phone calls through Instagram or LinkedIn about being Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
And I took one, man, maybe a month ago from a truck driver in Las Vegas. And he's like, I want to be a Navy SEAL. Like, I'm going to give everything up for it. And I said, okay, what are you doing now? He's like, I drive truck. And I said, okay, how long have you been driving truck? He's like, a year. And I said, how is your wife dealing with driving truck? She hates it. I said, okay, and we got one baby girl that's 2 and you got another baby girl on the way. I'm like, are you willing to write your life off for 6 years? He's like, what? And I said, yeah, like being a Navy SEAL, it's easy to become a Navy SEAL. The lifestyle, but you're not gonna be at home for 330 days a year. And so he was like, well, I don't get it. And so I explained it to him. I said, listen, you graduate from SEAL training, okay? You haven't seen your family, and now it's almost a year because of SQT. You haven't seen your family in a year, and now you go to your first platoon. You do a platoon workup for about a year. you're only going to be in San Diego or Norfolk for about 40 of those days in a calendar year, okay? And those 40 days, you're probably going to be doing some training at night, so you're not going to be home those days anyway, okay? You'll be home all of December, and that's about it. Mm. And I said, then you're going to go on deployment. You're going to be gone for 7 months.
Wow.
And the second you step back off that plane from deployment, you're going to want to go to sniper school, 4 months in Indiana. You're going to come back and go to breacher school, 3 months in Maryland. Then you're going to be like, oh, man, it's time to start the platoon workup. I'm going to take 2 weeks of leave with my family. Oh, we need you to go to comm school. And next thing you know, you're going to be in another cycle, and it will have been 4 years, and you might have been in Virginia Beach or San Diego for maybe 70 days total, if you're lucky. Mm. And so he was asking me, and he was like, adamant, I want to be a Navy SEAL. And I said, okay, that's fine. Just understand this. You're not going to have a wife, and you're never going to see your three kids again. Mm. And I said, I want you to think about that. So he called me back a week later, and he was still fired up, like, oh, the wife said, okay, chase your dream. Da-da-da-da-da. She was a Navy person too. So then it was like, oh, man. I said, listen, bud, you are going to lose your whole family.
Mm.
So if they're important to you, you cannot make this decision. I'm not telling you you have a chance. I'm telling you 100% guaranteed. If your wife is struggling with truck driving now, wait until you're doing stuff that got three people she knows killed, and you're not there.
Mm.
So then he called me back a week later, and then that conversation was a lot more civil. I can't do it. And I said, hey, man, I'm going to tell you right now, you're making the best decision of your life.
Yeah.
You know, like, you need to rethink about trying to go back to college, maybe to better your life a little bit. He didn't like truck driving. He's only making like $40,000 a year. And I just said, hey, but I'm just telling you, like, there's no chance you keep your family being a Navy SEAL. And so, like, sometimes I say it all the time, like, what you want and what's good for you are two different things.
Mm.
Right? Like, I got to tell my players all the time, like, I want to start. Okay, you're a true freshman. If you start, and there's probably problems on the team, well, I'm going to transfer so I can start. Okay, great. You're going to go down to 1AA. You're going to go to Division II. You're going to start for 4 years. And 4 years from now, you might be the same player, but you're going to have no NFL potential. Oh, right? Like, what they want and what's good for them are two totally different ends of the spectrum.
I love that, too, because it's like what I hear is, like, you're wanting people to make the decision because they're making the real decision. Like, people make these romanticized decisions, like, oh, I'm going to be a Navy SEAL. I'm going to have the family life I want, and I'm going to have that. And you're like, dude, that's not the reality. Now, if this reality is something you want, go for it. That's awesome. But be choosing the actual career path, not this made up romanticized BS version that doesn't exist. And I love that you do that with too. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's crazy, right? Like, yep. Like, cats think a Navy SEAL was a cool job.
Mm.
And I tell them, man, it's the most grimiest job in the world. Like, it's the hardest, grimiest job in the world.
Mm.
And they're like, well, how can you say that? I'm like, go lay in a hole in 110 degree weather for 4 days in the hindsight and not be able to move. And you sitting there peeing on the dude next to you, and he peeing on you, and you laughing at each other because that's the fun you're having in the hindsight, right? Like, that's the – and that ain't even on the next level of actually having to use the gun. But, like, so many people just have this romanticized vision, like, hey, we hop off the helicopter, you know, we PlayStation these dudes, like Call of Duty, and then we get back on the helicopter. And, you know, I tell them, I say, everybody I know in the SEAL team has been shot right now. Mm. Everybody. Not one person I know made it out has not been shot. So if you're good with getting shot, I mean, you're going to get shot. Like, everybody's been shot. We've been shooting people for 19 years. That means you do two or three deployments, well, it's going to get close to you. You know, and that's hard for people. I mean, you're in tech. You know, everybody wants to be the next Bill Gates or, you know, Zuckerberg or Elon Musk. But, dude, you ain't got that type of go. You're not going to go work out your garage like Bezos did for 7 years while everybody laughed at him, and he put all his money into Google AdWords, and they had nothing, and they were selling books, and he's boxing books. And, like, you're not about that life. You're not trying to win like that.
Mm-hmm.
No.
What brought about television for you?
All right, so the whole TV deal, we kind of talked about it a little bit with the New Hampshire gig.
Yeah.
But that truly was all that it was, like just a learning experience. But here's what happened. Like, I understand, and now I understand far better than I did back then. You want the guy that produces the unknown outcome in train wreck fashion, right? And as everybody tells me, I am the train that you know is going to crash, and you cannot not watch because you have to see how it's going to crash, right? Like, we don't watch NASCAR to watch people win. Let's be honest. We watch crashes, right? Like, oh, man, crash in lap 57. That's what I'm talking about. Seven cars out the race, right? So I was on Top Shot. They kept screwing with me. You know, they hang the carrot out there. You're going to be on TV. Do what we want you to do, right? But that don't work with me because I didn't really care. So I was like, look, I don't give a crap about the TV show. I'll walk off this mug. If you give me a gun, it doesn't work. So we went to the speed shooting competition. They gave me a gun that didn't work. I shot like 30 bullets. Everybody else shot like 80 bullets. I got 19 targets. I needed like 23 not to go to elimination. So I was like, hey, you know what? It's been real. I'm out of here. Deuces. I got 10 episodes. We gone. And I didn't really realize what I was doing. I had just had enough of the BS, right? You know, little 21-year-old metrosexuals in L.A. talking down to you. Get in the van. Who are you talking to get in the van? Oh, like I got in trouble because I was threatening people on the set. So I'm not threatening nobody. They threatened me, and they got the appropriate response for talking to me that way, right? Like, so when I walked off, I got on the plane. Steve Bellick, one of my classmates from 95, was in the airport. Like, what are you doing? I was like, yo, I just watched all this TV show. He's like, what? And so, like, we rode back to the East Coast together on a plane. It was awesome, man. Well, what I didn't realize happened, so fast forward, we shot in May. That was, like, October. The show was doing crazy. The show was at, like, it went from 1.5 million viewers to 2.5 million viewers. They thought they had a smash hit. Everything was rolling down the tracks a million miles an hour. Then I walked off the show. And when I walked off the show, I took 1.5 million people with me.
Whoa, man.
So my last episode was 2.5. When I walked off the show, 2.4. When I walked off the show, the next episode did 900,000 and they got canceled.
Wow.
So I got a phone call that Monday from a guy, and I'm not going to elaborate too much, but the context of the phone call was, you just took 1.4 million people with you. Your phone is never going to stop ringing for TV ever again. And I was just, you know, like one thing I learned about TV, it's all smoke and mirrors. Like no one is real. You know, like no one is concrete. No one is you got to look through five layers of smoke to even have a chance to think about what's on the other side. So I was just kind of like, ah, whatever, you know, whatever, bud. Okay, cool. Great. You know, no big deal. So then I started getting phone calls to be on TV shows and it'd be the same thing, right? Oh, you're going to be, we're casting you as the lead of this TV show. You're going to host this TV show. So after like the 10th one of those, they'd call me, and my first response was, send me a contract. Well, we need you to – no, you don't need me to do nothing. You got 10 episodes of me on Top Shot. If you need me to do something, then send me the contract. So that went on for probably 5-6 months, and then that June, I got a phone call from a little dude who's awesome, Scott, at Discovery Channel. He was like, hey, man, I'm casting you on this TV show. And I was like, send me a contract. He's like, okay, I'll send it to you tonight. Boom, contract came. I looked at it, sent it to my agent, my football agent, and he was like, it looks good. And so then he called me back the next day. I was like, hey, man, can you be in Denver on Sunday? So I got to go out there. I got to meet him. And he basically was like, look, no one's going to watch all these people on this TV show. I need people to watch the TV show. You're going to be on the TV show so people watch. And I'm out here, and this is the funny story. We out in the middle of the National Forest in Denver with High Noon Productions, Scott and the crew. It was just awesome. And I'm looking around like, okay, what's the African-American doing out here, right? Like, I know I grew up super country. I know I'm a super survival dude, but I'm out there with Matt Graham, no shoes on, all these wilderness dudes, Call of the Wild guys. And then the executive producer came up to me and said, listen, man, ain't nobody watching them on TV. You on here so people watch the show. And so that's how it happens, right? Like, I got a call the other day for an opportunity, and I just said, hey, great, you know, when you're ready to talk, send me a contract. You know, because this is the casting time. October to December is when they cast all their new shows, shoot their pilots in the early spring or the early winter, late winter, and then they start shooting in the spring, all summer for the TV shows. But like,
that's wild. I one of the quotes I read from you, it was something to the effect of like, you know, they take 48 minutes of footage from like 48 hours of video. Like they're telling a story. It doesn't, there's no reality here. They're telling a story. And I think most people have seen that with reality television. You're like, look, there's so many different ways. If anyone's ever watched, they'll do those. You know, I saw like someone remade The Shining, a movie trailer of The Shining with Jack Nicholson as like an endearing father and son love story. And it's like, yeah, you can take the footage from anything and tell a story with it. But it does seem like you've kind of cracked the code on how to get what you want out of this. And I love that sense of like seeing through the smoke and driving for the contract and realizing how much of this is just BS.
Yeah, because like, you know, like we're all human beings. We like, you know, we like people to like us, even though I don't really give a crap. Like I truly, since first grade, I give a crap if you like me or not. I just don't care, right? Yep. But, you know, someone calls you and they want to, you know, they want to pay you $20,000 for 4 days of work. You're like, oh man, I'm going to listen to this one a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I always throw it in. I'm wearing Illinois gear, right? Yeah. Oh, well, no, that's not negotiable. Like if I'm not going to benefit in my job, my job got to let me go do this. Like I'm getting promotional for University of Illinois. Oh, right. Like that's, it's always a, oh, and then, but now, so I know this network and I know these people. They already know. They didn't even ask me that question because they already know.
Like
I'm going to be pubbing University of Illinois. And then my next request is going to, they got to buy me a parachute. Like I need an $8,000 parachute. Because I'm going to parachute. We have all these helicopters flying around. I'm going to be parachuting out all these helicopters because it's just good for TV. You know what I'm saying? The host show up in the parachute. He don't just walk onto the set or get off of the motorcycle or ATV. He jumps in out of a plane. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, but that's all TV. That's all it is. Like, make it so people want to watch it.
Yes. Yep. That's awesome.
All. Yeah, that's how all that mess come around and kind of keep circling. And I probably do a really good job because I tell people no all the time.
Yeah, I love that though. Someone I was talking to was saying like we gravitate towards people who have firm boundaries. And it's true, like in business, if I know where someone's boundaries are and that they're not going to compromise, I'm like, I can work with you. Like I know what you stand for. And people sometimes feel like if they give in on things or accommodating, like that's easier, but it's harder to trust someone like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just hard. You know, like I tell everybody this. I'd rather have the guy like you're saying this hard line. Look, I will not do this, but I'm also not going to do this over here.
Yes.
Because the guy in the middle that's like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. Well, what else will you do?
Yep.
Right? We got, like, on my contract, you need to pay me extra $10,000 on my contract. Are you going to do that?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do this over here, right? Like, so I've seen it in TV. You know, I see some guys get screwed. So they say, hey, for the first season, we're going to pay you $5,000 an episode. The second season, we're going to pay you $20,000 an episode. Well, the first season's 25 episodes long. Wait a minute now. A season is only 10 episodes. No. This is a 25-episode season, right? Like, so you're basically getting me for 15 extra episodes at a discount of $15,000. And, oh, you know what? We're not going to cast you for season two. We got 3 years out of you. We'll just roll that over. We'll get somebody new. Mm. Right? So, like, the thing I figured out about reality TV, the reason it's reality TV because they don't have to pay nobody.
Mm.
Right? Which is fine with me if you're getting some ancillary benefit out of it. But, like, in my case, if you ain't letting me wear Illinois on it, and you ain't, you know, like, you're going to pay me some money, but it ain't no crazy money. Like, I'm good.
Yeah. That's great. What about for people interested in your career path? What's the hardest part of coaching football?
I would say the hardest part of coaching football, I just think it's if you play college football and you make the transition into coaching, I think it's relatively doable if you have some good mentorship, right? Mm-hmm. If you were a good person on your football team and you have some good mentorship, it's not hard, okay? Where it becomes hard is in my case, I walk into the game with no coaching experience in football at 34 years old.
Mm.
And all of my coaches for 10, 14 years before are out of the business or rolling out of the business on the long end of old. And that's the problem that you have. So, like, I tell people, like, these guys that want to get into coaching and have no coaching background, all right, you better know somebody. You better be willing to work in personnel. I think it's really hard to do if you've never coached. Mm. Now, if your dad's a coach, then you can go do it.
But yeah,
that's few and far between. Like, it's just one of those professions that literally the barriers to entry. I just had this conversation on Friday with a guy who in business, we were talking business stuff, and he was like, why is it so hard to get into? I said, I want you to think about it this way. There's 32 teams in the NFL. They roughly have 20 coaches apiece. That's 640 coaches in the NFL. There's roughly 128 Division I teams. They have roughly 12, 13 coaches of staff, plus some GAs and some other stuff. That's roughly 1,300 coaches. All in, you got 2,300 people in the business that are making any money.
Man.
So when you look at it, like, Walmart employs almost 1 million people.
Mm.
Right? Like, that's why it's so hard to get into. So, like, getting into my business, like, I'm in sports psychology now. Like, now I'm the director of man development, so to say. I guess I am the director of man development, but, like, sports psychology, leadership, just personal growth and development, goal achievement. Like, you can't do my job unless you got my resume.
Yeah.
Right. Like I deal with so many facets of the young man's life and how to change my message for this kid, vice this kid. I'm helping a couple guys get jobs right now.
Mm.
That's a totally different message than the freshman who's struggling right now to do a couple things on the field, and it's eroding his self-confidence.
Mm.
I say this, it's probably the best job leadership-wise that you could possibly have, because you're interacting with everybody on the team, including coaches.
What is your day-to-day life look like?
So I pretty much get up every day, give or take a little bit, but I get up at 5:30 right now.
Mm-hmm.
I go to the YMCA, I swim a little bit, sit in the sauna a little bit, and I get to work. We have walkthrough at 7. I get here at 7. I send out my LinkedIn right before that, so I'll do my LinkedIn the night before, and then I just hit send when I get to work, read it once again. Then we go to practice from 7 to about 10. I'll have meetings with players from 10 to basically whenever they get done, depending on what I'm dealing with. I'll have a couple fires in there somewhere. I'm running the executive, or I guess I'm helping run the executive leadership program for the University of Illinois now. And so I built the whole program, and I'm administering the whole program. So that takes up a little bit of my day. And then at 4:00, we got meetings again. I'll go to 4:00 meetings. I pretty much pick my kids up every day. So I'll pick my kids up at 5, drive them home. Right now, my oldest kid's in wrestling. So we'll come back here to the university, go to wrestling practice from 6 to 7. I'll go back to work when I drop him off, go pick him up at 7, take him back to the house. And then I'll be back here until probably 9:30.
Wow.
It's just one of those deals in this business. There's no such thing as nothing to do.
Yeah. I bet.
I love the thought of you though, in this role where, it seems like you're mentoring these young men and you're helping them. And it's like, man, I want your voice in their ear. Like, I want your advice for them. Like, I imagine you bring such a wealth of experience that's not normal for someone who may have just done coaching their entire career. You bring so much more into that. And I think that's great for you then to be able to mentor and help these kids find their path. Cause
it was like I said, like I'm helping a couple guys get business jobs, and it's a huge transition to go from playing college football to work in the business world. But it's basically that same competitive nature, but getting them to understand what they have to change or what they have to do better, and the haircuts and the grooming standards that they need to be successful in corporate America is a totally different thing than trying to get the kid to run, 586 H angle. That's what it is. Now, you talk about the voice and kind of the mentorship. It all comes back to what I do. And, I say we build champions for life. That's what we do. Like, I'm going to instill attributes and an understanding of how to get anything done that you need to get done, how to problem solve. And it helps because now, you know, like our kicker, Chase McLaughlin, when I got here as a 71% field goal kicker, now he's kicking. He went perfect last week for the 49ers. And that was basically a two-year process for him. But he bought in lock, stock, and barrel, and now he's kicking in the NFL. You know, I got a number of those guys that's what I'm telling them. You know, like we got a guy right now in SEAL training. And, you know, he's another success story. Like if you just listen, like I tell them all the same thing. If you listen to what I tell you and you do what I tell you to do, there's no way you will not be successful.
Yeah.
Now, 2019, half these kids think they can Google it and they can do it a different way better. They're going to end up calling me. Yeah. Right? Like my guy from Finley didn't want to go in the Army, wanted to go be a prison guard. I'm going to go be a prison guard. I'm going to kill it. I'm like, hey, bud, you need to go in the Army. You're going to be an awesome officer. Now I'm going to go to this prison. I'm going to love it. Call me when you don't want to be a prison guard anymore. Six months later, crying. Oh, I don't want to be a prison guard. It's awful. I'm like, okay, let's go in the Army. Okay. He just got done with Ranger School. He graduated number one in IOBC.
Wow.
At Ranger School, he loves it, right? Like, dude, I'm not going to send you somewhere where you're not going to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, you would all-state wrestler. Like, you're going to love the military. You already got great leadership skills. You're going to be a phenomenal officer in the Army. So that's my biggest conundrum now is, just letting them fail enough to where they come back to you and like, all right, I've had 10 job interviews and got no offers. Okay, are you ready to shave? Well, yes. Okay, well then go shave and let's get you some job.
I love that. I wanted to ask Chris Pisani, who made the introduction, had just shared a little bit, and I wanted to ask you about from your time at
You got jokes from Chris?
Well, he told me to ask you about Doug Zembeck and your time at the Naval Academy Wrestling.
Okay, so Doug, obviously Doug Zembeck, Line of Fallujah, you know, was my wrestler. I wrestled for 2 years at the Naval Academy. I got pissed off at football. I didn't make a good decision. I weighed 245 pounds playing nose guard. I lost. Went down to 167. And then first 3 days of camp, three defensive tackles broke their ankle, I would have got to play, right? Like, bad decision on my part. So I ended up going to wrestle. I wrestled 167. Doug Zembeck wrestled 77. So we wrestled a lot together, a whole lot. And it's interesting. So the story I tell about Doug, his last name is Zembeck, and my last name is Zwig. So we went to Marine Corps training, and I had heard about this phenomenal wrestler and So, you know, I won a state championship. I can wrestle a little bit. So we're in the end of the line in Marine Corps training down in Quantico, and I don't remember what we're doing. And I said, oh, man, that's the wrestler dude. And he's probably 6'2", you know, at the time, probably 185, like just slender dude. I'm like, this dude here can't wrestle. And so – like, I didn't know him at all. And so I'm like, hey, man, are you the wrestler? He's like, yeah. I'm like, you don't look like no wrestler. I bet y'all beat you, man. He was like, you ain't going to beat me? I'm like, I think I can, man. So, like, literally, he's like, let's go right now. And, like, literally, we went over to the grass, and he grabbed me. And I was like, oh, we good? And he was like, what? No, we got to wrestle. We don't have to wrestle. And he was like, what are you talking about? I said, you touch me, I touch you, I know. You can wrestle. And he looked at me and he smiled. He said, I like that. So then we got back in line and then we were in the fire team the whole team time together. And so, like, we just grew this bond. And then he went and wrestled. I played football for 2 years. And when I came back to wrestling, like, we got the same kind of mentality. Now, he's a world-class aerobic athlete, and I got asthma real bad. So, like, I struggled to keep up with the dude. But in the wrestling room, you know, he was All-American. So I wrestled with him. And so then as we went down the road and we went in the military, he went Force Recon. He was banging. And then I ended up – we were in Virginia Beach for 3 years pre any internet. And it's crazy because I went shooting every weekend, and I know he would have been there with me. Right, had unlimited bullets in the SEAL team, so we shot all the time. But we lived in the same place for 3 years. I never saw him. Wow. And he met his wife there. So anyway, fast forward, talked to him a couple times, and then he was the lion of Fallujah 04 in Fallujah. He did the big talk for the Washington Post where he was the unapologetic warrior and basically said, I'm over here to kill people. If you don't like it, don't send me to war. So then fast forward 2007, he ended up getting killed, running for Ground Branch in the CIA. And, you know, it was just one of those deals. I had just lost our linebackers coach at Catholic, lost his son in the 101st Infantry Division that season. So 7 months before, I had somebody standing next to me that lost his son in combat. And then I got the call from one of my buddies that Doug got killed. And so it's just a game changer, you know, like that's the one of the biggest regrets I got is that I sat the party out. You know, I got out in 01. I was real pissed. I got a call September 12th to come back in. I was still really pissed about how I got handled in the SEAL teams. And I just wasn't in a good place. So I said, I ain't going back. And now I wish I would have went and tore it up for 4 or 5 years. But, you know, I wouldn't have met my awesome wife. I wouldn't have 3 awesome kids. And so it's that hindsight, whatever. So my oldest son is named Zimbeck Douglas Wigg. Because Zimbeck's dad basically has a saying like, if you Google Doug Zimbeck, you can read his 10 tenets, but the last one of them is, we will never forget a fallen soldier. We'll never let rest those who caused his death, something like that, paraphrased. And so my thing was, how can I honor Doug Zimbeck without calling him Doug? You know, you call something, everybody knows your name is Doug, right? Like no one's going to stop and ask you, why is your name Doug? So I just inverted his name, and it's kind of neat because a couple other people have kind of taken and it's resonated with them. So there's a Graysick out there, a Graysick Victor named after Skip Victor named his son after his roommate from the Naval Academy who got killed. So, you know, we've been at war a long time. That's my boy. We're doing justice by him every day. You know, like you do something kind of to have, you know, a positive effect or just, you know, just to remember him. And then now that dude lives in my house every day. Like I'm part of the Zimbeck family. I helped Pam Zimbeck get the Lion of Fallujah is coming out in the movie. They're rolling that out. Travis Lively is one of my E6 SEALs, wrote the movie for Pam.
Wow.
So it's like this whole web now. And every day that dude lives in my house.
That's beautiful.
So, you know, and hey, you ask Zimbeck who he's named after, he's going to give you the whole story. We tried to show him their Mission Barbecue did this awesome 11-minute video with Coleman Ruiz about Doug Zimbeck, and he's only 7, so he cried a lot, so we didn't watch it all. You know, he lasted like 3 minutes, and it was pretty powerful now. He said, hey, man, he started bawling, and I said, why are you crying? He said, because I'm named after that man, and he was an awesome American. You know, and I just said, okay, he ain't old enough yet, right? We'll back him off a little bit, and he'll learn more about his namesake down the road, but – you know, that's a powerful one for me.
That's powerful.
Means a lot. And, you know, that dude, he branded, I tell the story, like, so I got a brand on my arm. That part right there, Doug Zimbeck did, but he was shaking real bad. So then I let my roommate finish it. My roommate finished the rest of it, but he got that brand in right there. So, you know, a lot of people, and, you know, I don't claim that that was my best friend. It was just a dude I had a lot of reverence for, and we went way back in the trenches from a handshake at Marine Corps training as freshmen at the Naval Academy.
That's beautiful. Well, I know we're at the end of our time, but I always like to hand the mic over for the last question. And either what have we not covered you want listeners to know, or what's some final words of wisdom you want to leave them with?
No, I mean, we're good. I want to know, you know, like, so you got out, right? And you're doing business, tech stuff. You know, kind of give me a little bit about this. I know this is your show, but
yeah.
I mean, how did you make that jump?
Oh man!
Although you got that new power mind spinning around, right?
And I don't know. I could have done it without business school too. Like I know that everyone wants to get an MBA, but it's hard to imagine doing all this without it. So that kind of gave me the lens of what else is out there and helped me find that I really like startups. I love the act of creating. So yeah, I feel like I got the shit beat out of me for 10 plus years in tech startups, but learned a ton. And, you know, it's kind of like, I shouldn't have been an electrical engineering major. I was, but I remember the pitch that they gave me at the Naval Academy that got me to do it was one of the professors was saying like, oh, you know, my wife is always leaving the garage door open. So I built this little light to go off if the garage door is open. It saves us this. I'm like, that's a cool tool to have.
Yeah.
I feel like that with startups. I'm like, when you get used to starting things, you start to realize, like, if you see something that sucks, you can find a way to fix that. You know, that's where Beyond the Uniform came from. I'm like, man, people don't know what they're going to do when they get out of the military. And because of all this startup training, I'm like, there's got to be a way to fix that. And yeah. I love that tool set.
Awesome, man. I just want you to know, I got the only two A's I got at the Naval Academy were an electrical engineer.
Oh, don't say that. That was the only classes I didn't get A's in were my major.
You smart dude, though. You was over there in cables and everything else. I was down there. I was doing computer science. I've been programming since seventh grade. So,
oh, my God.
I wasn't struggling in school at all.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time. And
awesome,
and for listeners, in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org, I'm going to put a ton of resources about Jake and what he's up to. And yeah, we're rooting you on, man. I think that you're doing great work. And I love to see you making progress towards your big goal.
Awesome, man. I really appreciate it, bud.
Surface.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you, and more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life, and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all-volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org, there is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.